The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mai, good afternoon. Man in Line today is talking about Manx Care and the medical director is Dr. Chris Stockport, the responsible officer for the Isle of Man's medical profession, which means high quality clinical practice and delivery, monitoring, research and development, and the medicines that we take. So he's at the sharp end, shall we say, or in charge of the sharp end. Chris Stockport, Faster Mike. Good afternoon, Chris.
Afternoon.
Well, you're kind of in at the deep end here because you've only been with the organisation how long?
About 3 months, just over 3 months.
Okay, so from the top then, let's start for new readers. What is a medical director? What does he or she do?
Well, to start with, a medical director is a doctor, so it's the person who, I suppose, is the most senior doctor in the organisation, helps to support and regulate the doctors, gives advice to the board about medical matters, and gets involved in keeping the service as safe as is ever possible.
Okay, so a physician yourself, any speciality?
I'm a GP by background.
Okay, yeah. So you'll know all about GP pressures. Oh, I mean, I have to say, first of all, you were in North Wales, is that right, before?
I was, yes. Okay. I've just come across.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously, there are stresses and strains on Manx Care here. Are they replicated across? Are the same sort of problems across? Shortage of GP, shortage of dentists, things like that?
There are problems across. If you look at the NHS over on the in the UK, I would probably say the pressures are greater than the pressures here. Certainly in our hospital environments, pressures are often much greater than here in Nobles. But as you say, out in our community settings, GPs, dentists, all of the other professionals that work within a health system are also in very short supply across.
Okay, so in your, I mean, from your office, as it were, to the sharp end, which is patient care of people, how do you see your role in making sure that works and is effective to the end user, to the customer, to the client, to the patient?
I think the first thing we need to do is be honest about the services that we do have here. We've got some really good services here on the Isle of Man, doing some incredible things. You only have to look at how we've dealt with the last 2 weeks on the island. Extreme pressure upon the service, and the service has dealt with it in the way that it always does each year. Really, really well. Fantastic trauma services, and fantastic services wrapping around those trauma services, because you can't do that just with our trauma team. It needs the whole service to be working really well. So there are lots of things that we're doing really well here. That's the starting point, to build upon those services, and then we can improve the little bits that need to be improved alongside. But let's always recognise the good things that are being done.
Okay. In terms of clinical oversight, if you like, leadership, where do you fit within the overall matrix, the strategy, if you like, the organisation in Manx Care?
I'm one of the executives, so I sit on the board in the organisation, involved in our strategic thinking and in the delivery of that strategic plan. On every working day, work with the department, work with medical and non-medical professionals across the organisation to make sure that strategy actually reflects best practice.
Okay. One thing I think a medical director has to look at in operational management is budget responsibilities. You know, where the money's coming from, where the money's going to. I mean, I realise you've only been there 3 months, but how are things at the moment? How's your role at the moment where that's concerned?
We're making good inroads in terms of getting to a balanced position in the organisation, and that's really important. There are things that we do in all of healthcare, whichever organisation you are in, that perhaps can be done in different ways. And often we over-treat people in modern healthcare services. So when we start to concentrate on some of those areas, we can find the opportunities to become more efficient and then make sure that the services we're offering are the right services and stay within budget.
Do you have anything to do with the supply chain? Do you have anything to do with how things are sourced within Manx Care if you have budget responsibility?
I don't have a direct budget responsibility for the supply chain.
Okay. But as you say, if people are getting over-treated sometimes, if people are getting too much care, really, and obviously that's not a good use of resources, how do you see your role in trimming that?
Much of that is about working with the healthcare professionals and other professionals within the organisation to start to recognise that. It might be that we are keeping people in care for a longer period of time that is necessary, or we may be delivering care at greater cost because we're sending individuals for treatment in other parts of the world across over in the UK, for example, which we could be providing here. Or it may be that treatment options have moved forwards and there are different ways of offering the same treatment or even better treatment. So I can influence in all of those areas.
Okay. It's been mentioned before, I think, in the recent past about the fact that, as you say, we send people across to do certain, to have certain procedures that perhaps we could do here, and that would develop a skill base over here. But obviously, that's going to need resources, money. It's going to need a budget. How do you see your role within that? With respect to the rest of the senior management of Manx Care.
The decisions that we make in terms of moving resources around within the health system have got to be built first and foremost upon patient safety. And that's where my role comes into this. So if we're talking about moving a service from A to B or reorganising a service, then the first question we always ask is that the safe thing to do? If it's the safest thing to do, then I'll work with healthcare professionals to establish what that change could look like. And then we work with others within the organisation to make it happen.
Okay, I'm outright in saying you're the responsible officer for the Ardermans medical profession, is that right?
I am, yes.
Okay, so high quality clinical practice and delivery as well. And also, I mean, to just go back on what you were saying about moving, if you like, skill sets around instead of sending people across, bringing that skill over here. Do you see anything in your role of helping the medical professional, if you like, improve their skills over here for this to become a centre for excellence in certain aspects?
Absolutely. So being the responsible officer means ensuring that all of the doctors in the organisation are staying up to date, are practising in the most effective way, and have got opportunities to develop even further. And that means bringing more specialist services to the island where that's safe to do. There are some services that you simply could not provide safely in a population of 90,000. People. But there are many services that we could provide differently, and that's exactly where my role as a responsible officer comes in.
Any idea of examples that we could perhaps do better or bring over here?
There are a number of patients, for example, that we will send across into the northwest of England for treatment, where actually it would be more simple to bring the consultant over here to provide the care here. That's a simple example, and we've been doing that in some of our orthopaedic activity, for example. There are other areas that are very similar to that, which we could do on the island with the support of specialists from across.
Okay. Are you involved in the social care aspect of Manx Care at all?
Manx Care is an integrated organisation and social care is within that, so I do have a responsibility there, although it's not the most it's not the responsibility that takes the most of my time.
Okay. I was just thinking about, you know, when you're saying that sometimes that people get overtreated. We've often heard that rather strange term of bed blockers, of people who are in hospital when they should be in social care. Is that something that is currently a priority at Manx Care?
It is a priority, and so it should be, because if you delay discharging patients back home, then they very quickly decondition, meaning that they are less likely to return home with the capabilities and the mobility that they had before. And that's really serious, because besides the fact that that influences the quality of life, it makes it more likely that they'll then require further treatment further along. It's in everybody's interests to ensure that we allow and support patients to get home as quickly as possible. Doctors sometimes refer to pyjama paralysis, and it is absolutely that. The longer we keep people in hospital beds unnecessarily, the less likely they are to be mobile afterwards.
Okay. Right, let's get to the phones. I think we've got Julian with us, first of all. Julian, hi, you're live with Dr. Chris Stockport.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Chris.
Hello.
Hi. I've got two quick questions for you, Chris, so I'll crack on. I notice you're a member of the General Osteopathic Council for Wales. And as a result of that, do you think that vitamin D levels should be regularly monitored across the general population, not just for osteoarthritis and osteomalacia, but many other health conditions, and potentially recommend a much higher daily vitamin D dosage to get people's blood levels optimised?
Okay, and your second question?
Manx Radio and Sky News yesterday reported that 1,000 NHS doctors say that the UK assisted dying bill is not safe and deeply flawed. Just like to know your opinion on that, and also the statement that was made last year that a third of doctors on the island would leave on ethical grounds if assisted dying legislation was brought onto the island.
Okay, first one first.
Okay, so I actually am no longer on the Osteopathic Council because I no longer live in Wales. But you're right, I did used to be. In terms of vitamin D, I'm not sure there's an awful lot of evidence that would support the need to regularly check in a UK population with a normal diet. If there are specific concerns, then GPs will sometimes request vitamin D levels, and there are other blood tests that need to be done alongside that, because it's not always just about vitamin D, but they would usually be done on a one-to-one basis, and I think that's probably the right way going forwards.
Okay, and assisted dying?
Assisted dying is always going to be a contentious subject, and doctors, there are a range of views in terms of assisted dying, and you don't have to be a doctor for very long to have experienced some very difficult deaths and to understand why assisted dying might be important to some people. There's a lot of work to be done yet in terms of working through how assisted dying should or shouldn't work. And doctors are very keen to contribute to that debate. I don't know whether that proportion of doctors genuinely do wish to leave the island. What I do think as we move forward now is that doctors need to contribute to the conversation so that we can work out how we best move forwards with the legislation as has been passed.
Okay, does Manx Care have a position on assisted dying?
It's too early to form a position in terms of assisted dying. What we will do is work with the department and with all interested parties to establish how Manx Care plays its best role within this debate as we move forwards to a position of trying to as an island make sense of enacting the legislation.
Okay, Julian?
Yeah, the reason I ask about the assisted dying is there's a recent report out from the Netherlands, and the psychiatrists there are very worried that there's a massive explosion in non-terminal medical conditions in under 30-year-olds being given assisted dying. And also Canada recently, where we talk about the legalities of it is one of the problems that the doctors have as well as the ethics. Three physician whistleblowers in Ontario have reported 428 cases of possible criminal violations of their MAID legislation. And it was originally promised to be rare only for the terminally ill, but it's now the fifth leading cause of death in Canada, with a projected 17,000 people will be euthanized in the 2024 figures. Just wondered if you think that that might happen here, where once the doors open, the Pandora's box will be opened like pretty much all the other jurisdictions that have gone down this route.
I think it's a really difficult subject. I don't know about those numbers. What I do know is as we tiptoe into that territory here, we have to do that very carefully. we have to be really clear in how we monitor it going forward. And that's not really an issue for me as the medical director of Manx Care. Okay. It's certainly an issue for me to contribute to. But I'm sure that our politicians are minded to that.
OK. All right, Julian, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Okay, 22 minutes past 12. It's assisted dying, Chris, is something that's exercised a lot of comment on Man in Line, because obviously people have very trenchant views one way or the other, and in the middle, the general public, most of whom it doesn't even affect, really don't know which way it's going to go. But I appreciate your view on that. In terms of you were talking about skilling people up and maintaining the level of skill. In terms of training on the Isle of Man, most people don't know. We hear very often that GPs are away for an afternoon because they're having training. Does that happen right across Manx Care, across the clinical piece, as it were? Do clinicians have ongoing training?
Yeah, absolutely. Doctors are not able to revalidate and retain their license to practice without being able to demonstrate that they have been involved in continual training as they progress through their career. We do it in different ways, in different teams. So the GPs will close practices periodically to come together so that they're having conversations with other GPs. Sometimes in a hospital setting, it's a little bit easier to bring clinicians together and doesn't always require a service to close for a few hours. But where that's necessary, then that absolutely is what we do, because it's right that our healthcare professionals are at the top of their game.
Okay. And regarding that sort of the training that goes on, do you validate that training on behalf of the clinicians, or is that external?
A little bit of both. We do validate some of our mandatory training that is a requirement for clinicians. But many clinicians will engage in external activity which is validated from the providers of that activity. Ultimately, for their revalidation, I will then sign it off on behalf of the organisation for the GMC to then allow them to maintain their licence.
Okay, there was a recent report, this is a note in from Mary B, and just said, could you ask the speaker from Manx Care about the sexual health results from this year's TT? They put out a statement saying that sexual health diseases go 80% year on year. Surely this is an epidemic and unsustainable for a small island population. Is that true?
It is true that our sexual health tendencies will increase during the TT. TT does not just bring an increase in trauma episodes, although it does bring a very significant increase in trauma. It brings an increase in activity in all aspects, almost, and sexual health is one of those. Those numbers are similar in previous years, and in fact, in all festival-type activities, you tend to see an increased spike in sexual health-related increased attendances.
In general, is sexual health getting better or worse? We've heard anecdotal notes about chlamydia and gonorrhea in some cases as well. Is it fairly easy to control sexual health on an island population?
I don't believe that we have any particularly difficult issues from a sexual health perspective. You only have to open a UK newspaper to see stories about gonorrhea and chlamydia. They're issues of the Western world.
Yeah, okay. And a note also about, this is, what's the current position with the ophthalmic department, says John. I believe two consultants recruited have left their positions. You don't have to comment, but I'm supposed to be monitored for my glaucoma condition, but seem to have dropped off the system.
So if John wants to get in touch, we'll just make sure that he hasn't dropped off the system and make the necessary changes if anything has occurred. We do have a growth in ophthalmic activity. As the population grows older, which is a good thing, so do the number of ophthalmic-related conditions, and cataracts and glaucoma become certainly more common as you get older. So that certainly accounts for the increase in activity that we've seen. And some of that activity needs to be undertaken off island now, because some of the treatments, particularly for certain sorts of glaucoma, are really complicated and very much different from when I started my training. So we're reviewing the model for how we deliver ophthalmic care here on the island, how we support our optometrists on the high street to deliver more care without requiring the input of nobles, and we'll continue to do that.
An acronym which has become increasingly prevalent these days, and lots of people hear the acronym but don't quite know what it means, and that is ADHD. I got a note in from a lady who just says that her son suffered from ADHD all his life but was only diagnosed last year. He went to university, got a degree, and has gone on to get a professional qualification. How he's done this, she said, I don't know. He suffers from panic attacks, brain fog, lack of concentration, sleep anxiety, and being indecisive. The list goes on. What's the ADHD provision at Manx Care?
We recognise at Manx Care that there is further work to do in terms of ADHD. We do provide an ADHD service for children. The service is for adults. Similarly to many healthcare services, are less well developed. And in part that reflects the fact that over the course of the last number of years, the diagnoses of ADHD in adulthood have massively increased as the criteria for diagnosis have changed. We are still responding to that.
Why do you think there's been a rise in prevalence or awareness of ADHD? Was it called anything else before it was called ADHD?
It's had a few names along the way, but generally ADHD is the one that most would recognise and has been around now for a good number of years. The criteria have changed over a number of years in how you diagnose ADHD, and that has captured more people. Alongside that, the awareness of ADHD has made more people come forward with symptoms. So it's a little bit, I think, of both. There are a good number of professionals who question whether we've got the balance of that just right, so we're trying to navigate through that and establish what services on the island should look like.
Okay, I'll just finish with the lady who just said that her son went to see a psychiatrist who diagnosed him, cost £1,000, got a medication at £90 per prescription, and unfortunately it didn't work. He was unable to sleep and had all sorts of thoughts and what have you. It just didn't go down very well. So, I mean, some people, when this goes, you know, when people do have this situation, or they have family members who have this situation, it may not be a cut that's bleeding, it may not be a broken leg, but to those sort of people, to the people who were affected by it, that's really important. What can you say to people who have anxiety about this condition?
No, that is really important. I'd say the first person to have a conversation with is your GP, because GPs are really good at recognising conditions like ADHD and the other conditions that sometimes look similar to ADHD but might require a slightly different approach. Those approaches might include medicines, but they might include many other therapies as well. And we know for psychological conditions, as well as for conditions like ADHD, that there are a lot of non-medication treatments that are just as effective or certainly help. So first port of call there is your GP. Don't worry if you're taking a medication that doesn't seem to be helping. Go and speak to your health professional.
Chris Stockport is on. Dr. Stockport is the Manx Cares Medical Director. As you heard, he's the responsible officer for the Isle of Man's medical profession. And we're on till one today. And if you want to get in touch, then text 166177. WhatsApp, same number. Email studio at manxradio.com. Call
66 1368. Order! In this case for Manx Car Store, let's review the facts. Firstly, you handpick an excellent range of quality cars for all budgets, are a trusted car sourcing specialist, you knowingly open 7 days a week, and are subject to an excessive number of five-star web reviews. How do you plead?
Guilty.
Very well. This court hereby declares Manx Car Store five-star.
Don't take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Visit manxcarstore.com or find them on Facebook.
Spectrum Windows. If your house needs a new look and your windows let in rain, keep those cold breezes out and make it look like new again. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows. Quality through and through. Great work guaranteed to you. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows.
Enjoy uncompromised relaxation at great prices in Millichap's Stressless Studio Clearance Event. Come and see the clearance prices for yourself and find out which of Stressless's range of recliner chairs is right for you. The Stressless Studio Clearance Event, now on downstairs at Millichap's of Ramsey.
Looking to make the most of your savings? Cornerstone Bank offer a range of savings options, from fixed terms of 6 months to 3 years, to variable rate notice accounts with notice periods of 95 to 180 days. And choose monthly or annual interest, whatever works for you. For the latest rates and an application form, check out cornerstonebank.co.im. Cornerstone Bank, celebrating 90 years of community, heritage and connection. Here for the journey. All deposits are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. No early withdrawals permitted. Qualifying deposits made with Cornerstone Bank are covered by the Isle of Man Depositors Compensation Scheme as set out in the Depositors Compensation Scheme Regulations 2010.
To celebrate Father's Day on Sunday, this weekend on Manx Radio, we're giving you the chance to win with Tinwald Mills. Up for grabs, we have a £50 gift voucher and lunch for two at the Neb Cafe. To win, listen out right across the weekend for our special dad-themed question. As soon as you hear it, text your answer to 166177 and make sure you're listening on Monday afternoon to find out if you're the lucky winner. Tinwald Mills is the perfect destination for gifts, with everything from stylish furnishings and clothing to home wear, dog grooming and a cosy cafe. Celebrate Father's Day this weekend with Tinwald Mills and Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Dr. Chris Stockport, Manx Care's Medical Director. He's been on the Isle of Man, or been in the job about 3 months or so. Still feet under the table, as it were. But you know what GPs are like. They're very resourceful. Why do women, said Joe, why do women still have to fight for HRT in this day and age? And why don't they give testosterone? It's like getting blood from a stone on the Isle of Man, along with why gynae health and conditions are still having to be fought for to get treatment, things like endometriosis. That's from Joe.
In my professional lifetime, I've seen the journey of HRT go a full circle. When I started my GP training, HRT was very commonly prescribed, and without doubt was very successful in dealing with a large number of important symptoms. the problem came with some very big studies, which demonstrated that whilst it brought out great relief from gynecological symptoms, prolonged use of HRT increased a number of very significant other conditions, such as certain cancers and problems with circulation. And almost overnight, the use of HRT massively fell away. More recently, HRT has become used a little bit more often, but it has to be used really carefully, and it has to be used in a situation where you then see an improvement in your symptoms. And so one of the reasons doctors are reluctant to prescribe HRT is to get that balance right. Getting that balance right involves a really good conversation with the patient in front of you, and to work out what is important to that person. So I'd urge you to go and discuss that with your GP and have a really careful discussion about what the risks and what the benefits are, and make a decision together.
For some women, I mean, it's worth saying most men won't appreciate this, but for some women, the change, the climacteric, everything, it's hell on earth. And negotiating their way through that can often be, well, it depends on the woman, of course. Some women handle it a lot better than others. So you're saying to get, is the best advice from the GP, or will a specialist be necessarily the person to see?
So again, first port of call, go to see your GP, because common things are common, and GPs are very used to being able to deal with common conditions, particularly where they interact in lots of different ways. And if your GP is concerned, they'll refer you on to the specialist. So it doesn't stop you from getting a specialist opinion if that's what's needed.
Okay, let's go back to the lines. And let me see, we've got Brian with us. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Sandy. Right, so what I'm going to ask is, I've been waiting for 2 days now to get an answer. I've been phoning up the eye people because I've got cataracts.
Right.
I've been waiting 12 months now to be seen. When you're in the likes of Liverpool and Manchester, you're seen with cataracts within 3 or 4 weeks. This island, it's got a waiting list of 2 years. Why?
Okay.
It's ridiculous, this. Are they waiting for people to go blind? Is that what they want?
Okay, Chris Stockport.
No, absolutely. That's not what we want. And you're correct to say that there is a waiting list at the moment for cataract treatment. We are working hard to reduce that waiting list. But you're correct that there is a wait. There are waits in other areas as well, not just in the Isle of Man, but that doesn't help your situation. So I'm quite happy to look in to the delay for you if you can leave details with colleagues. I'm happy to come back to you.
Okay, thank you, Brian. We've got your telephone number. The Manx Care will be in touch about that. What was crikey, I've forgotten the name now. They were here, the team that was brought over from Scotland that did all those hip replacements and cataracts and what have you, because that got the waiting list down quite a lot, didn't it?
It did get the waiting lists down. Of course, there's a balancing point between how much money we spend to bring in outside services versus using that money to invest in our own services so that we're able to deal with that workload ourselves. And sometimes there's a little bit of a lag period as you're doing that work.
Okay. And I think most people are aware of the fact that you're on the horns of the dilemma. You're caught in this, in that everybody wants what they want when they want it, and obviously you have to allocate resources to make sure that things are done that way. So who decides what goes where and when, Chris, in terms of resources?
We try to base our use of resources around population need. So we work with our public health colleagues and colleagues in the Department of Health to understand what the needs are across the island and what the greatest priorities are from a departmental perspective. And then we match that against the capability and resource that we have to best match that. It's a continual journey that we go along to do that with refinement, and we don't always get it right. But as we go through in our planning, we take careful note to those areas where waiting lists are developing so that we're able to prioritise addressing those as we continue to reform and adapt our services.
OK, here's a note in. This is from Tracy, who just said, can you ask, Chris, why are we so short of GPs and dentists?
For the same reason that many other Western countries are short of GPs and dentists. If I start with GPs, the role of the GP has changed massively over the last 20 years. We have a population which is getting older. And that population, as you get older, often has more chronic disease problems. And having several chronic disease problems sometimes takes an awful lot of coordination as you're trying to manage one condition against a second condition and just getting medications right and trying to work out what the priorities are for the person in front of you. And that's the role of the GP, really. It's something that GPs do really well. And so the workload to do that and to deal with frailty has mushroomed over the course of the last decade or so. And so across almost every Western healthcare system, healthcare professionals that are trained to do that are becoming very scarce resources, and we compete with other countries for our GPs. Dentistry is slightly different because the range of treatments available in private dentistry has massively changed again over the course of the last 10 or 20 years now. Treatments that you wouldn't previously have been able to get, all sorts of cosmetic treatments, veneers, teeth whitening, implants, has completely changed the private dental market. And unfortunately, many dentists decide that is the area of dentistry that they're most interested in, rather than the more sort of public health state dentistry that we require.
Where are all the GPs going? Are they going for better money, better conditions? Are they going to America, Australia, New Zealand? Do we know where?
No, I don't think our GPs are necessarily going anywhere else. If you we recruit most, not all, but most of our GPs from across. If you look across, there are real difficulties in recruiting GPs across the entire of the UK. I can certainly recall the difficulties that we had in my previous organisation in Wales recruiting GPs, and if anything, it was more difficult there than it is here.
Mark dropped a note in from 179, just said, hundreds of youngsters leave school every year, all needing good jobs. Can't we push them towards being doctors and nurses? Can't we? Is there any way of getting our young people into the medical profession? Is this the government giving up on our young?
No, that's a fantastic question, and I'm really really glad that Mark raised that, because that is exactly what we're looking at doing. And there are a number of areas that have successfully found ways to support prioritising putting people through health professional training, knowing that they, or many of them at least, will come back. One of the things that we need to work through with that is the lead time between encouraging somebody doing their A-levels to go off to university to train as a doctor, to then do specialist training before then returning. And sometimes that can mean that you're investing money in sending people to medical school whilst waiting for 10 years or so for them to then return as a GP, for example. So we need to work through some of that, but we are certainly exploring that with relish.
Okay. And I think when the matrons were on here, the ladies in the red smocks were on a few weeks back, they were talking about the fact that nursing is now a degree profession.
It is.
Can nurses qualify on the Isle of Man? Can they get the degree qualification here, or do they have to go away?
We work with a number of providers to support a postgraduate and undergraduate training here on the island, and nursing is one of those areas.
Okay, and just going back to the young then, are young people still interested in medicine as a career?
Yeah, I think so. There are still far more applicants to the number of medical training places available in the UK. So there's certainly no shortage of potential medical students.
Okay, we're with Chris Stockport from Manx Cares, the medical director. And if you want to get in touch, I've got a pile of questions here to get through. I'll find my next one in a moment. Oh, here we are. And it said, could you ask why my partner's been waiting for 6 months for a response to an email from the colonoscopy department? This is a general question about communication. Sometimes things don't get passed on. If somebody doesn't get a response, do they just have to keep trying the same number? Is there an email that somebody should get through to? And obviously that's a source of frustration if somebody doesn't get a response.
Yeah, absolutely it is. If you go onto the Manx Care website, you'll see a reference to a service called MCALS. They're the people to contact, and they'll be able to chase that down for you. Otherwise, if you leave your details, I'll give them across to MCALS as well.
Okay, another question. You were mentioning dentistry and the fact that many more procedures are now available through private dentistry, and many people draw the conclusion now that you just have to get private dental insurance because sometimes you just can't get the treatment on the National Health. What's your response?
There is always a place for the National Health Service to provide dental treatment. Now, that dental treatment has to be treatment that is going to better your health. State-funded treatment always has that in mind. And that means that there'll be a number of treatments that people might like to have, which are unlikely to be prioritised by state funding. But that basic treatment that is required should still be available, and we're committed to ensuring that continues to be available.
Okay, and here's a question from Paul, and this is about this is about hospital superbugs and how they are controlled at the moment. Do we have the hospital superbug at Nobles?
I see far less reports of concern with regard to superbugs and superinfections here than I ever saw in previous organisations. But that's not to say that it's an issue that we can forget about. Superbugs are closely associated with overusing antibiotics, and so we always have to have that in mind as we, be it anybody prescribing, we always have to have that in mind when we consider the use of antibiotics.
Okay, well, we had a pharmacist on a few weeks ago talking about antibiotics and the fact that they've been around now for, well, presumably it was just after the First World War that they first started to appear. Are antibiotics as effective as they used to be, or is it in the use of them, i.e. people not using the full dose or the full course?
All of that, really. Yes, they are effective. They're enormously effective if you use them for the right conditions. So if you use them for bacterial infections that aren't going to resolve themselves, then assuming that the infection isn't one that is multi-resistant, then we'll have an antibiotic that can help with it. Of course, if we start antibiotics, then we do need to use them in a way that is most likely to be successful, and that means using the right dose, and it means completing the treatment as prescribed.
And the pharmacist, we again, when the pharmacist was on, we were talking about the minor injuries scheme, and you said that the role of GPs has changed, and the role of pharmacists seems to have changed as well.
Absolutely, and there are so many problems that you can fix now just by a walk into your high street to your local community pharmacy. We have a minor ailment scheme now where there are a number of conditions that your community pharmacy can treat with an NHS prescription in just the same way as if you would have gone to your GP and got that prescription. So certainly try your high street pharmacist if you have a minor ailment, and they'll do their level best to assist.
And what's the mandate that the pharmacist has from Manx Care? Where does their responsibility, if you like, start and finish?
So there's a list of conditions for this scheme that they're able to treat, and they work within that list of conditions.
Okay, I was wondering when this one would come up. This is from 667, a text of 667. COVID. Is there a new COVID strain out there?
The simple answer to that is yes, because there are always slightly evolving strains of COVID, but there is no concern at the moment that we have a new pandemic heading our way, which I think maybe is where the listener is concerned.
Yeah, you don't have a big file marked marked COVID or anything like that.
No, not at all, but these viruses do continually evolve and change and modify, which is one of the reasons why we recommend people have their COVID boosters on a regular basis. The same is the case with flu. Flu constantly evolves, and that's why you have to have a flu vaccination for the flu virus every year.
What was the winter just gone like for flu? Was it standard or up or down?
Well, I'll have to tell you what flu was like in Wales, because that's where I was this last winter, and it was pretty much an average winter. I imagine it was the same here.
Okay. This question was, where are we? Oh, more on the COVID strain. Just one question. Could you ask Dr. Stockport, COVID seems galaxies away now, but did that take you by surprise? How did you feel about the whole thing? Did it surprise you?
It evolved very quickly, and we saw the beginnings of it in January or February of that year, and I think a few people were aware that there may be something developing here before it caught very big attention. But we're always mindful to pandemics, and each year we prepare for a flu pandemic. It's many years since we've actually had a very big flu pandemic, and in some respects, certainly most health organisations prepare hard for pandemics. So whilst we might not have expected it to have been COVID, we were to some extent prepared for an outbreak like that.
Okay, the half a dozen people are asking me about assisted dying. We've done the assisted dying bit, so thank you for that. What I want to do is, just quick to mention that in 2 weeks' time, actually 2 weeks tomorrow, the Manx Care Chief Executive is going to be on. Teresa Cope will be on Wednesday 25th. That's 2 weeks tomorrow. This coming Friday, Chris Thomas, MHK, former Minister for Infrastructure and also Minister for Policy and Reform, will be on this coming Friday, and we're with Chris Stockport, who's the Medical Director at Manx Care at the moment. And this question is regarding stakeholders as well. Stakeholder communication. Who are the stakeholders within Manx Care? Who's involved in that?
stakeholders or anybody interested in the service that are that we're providing. So that may be organisations that work with Manx Care, independent GPs, independent dentists, independent pharmacists. It might be the other hospitals that support us, the charities and other organisations that work alongside us. But the most important stakeholder of all, of course, is the public. And in every consultation I have, it's that relationship between the person in front of me and tailoring the treatment to them. The same thing applies on a Manx Care level. It is absolutely crucial that patients are first and foremost in that stakeholder relationship.
Okay, Manx people are very forthright. Sally said, "Could you ask Dr. Stockport, is he happy that he's come and is he staying?"
Yes, I'm loving it here on the island. I am happy that I've come, and for sure I'm staying.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it. I've learned something new. What was it? A pajama paralysis.
Pajama paralysis. Yeah, Google it.
Pajama paralysis. We've been with Chris Stockwell. If you want to follow up on this, by the way, the answer phone's going to be on 682-631 if you want to follow up on this or anything that we've talked about or put any more questions. We'll keep them in the file. And enjoyed this, Chris. Will you come back in the future?
Yeah, for sure.
Just tell us how things are going. That's it for Man in Line today. We're back tomorrow with another open line. And of course, the answer phone will be on. Drop a note to maninline@manxradio.com. So this Friday, Chris Thomas, MHK. And a fortnight tomorrow, Teresa Cope, the Manx Care Chief Executive. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. And enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.